Liz. Nicole Judice is a senior policy and M&E advisor at Futures Group, and Liz Snyder is an M&E advisor at Futures Group as well. They are the authors of the Framework for Monitoring and Evaluating Efforts to Reposition Family Planning, and they are the activity leads for this framework and this activity, which they will be presenting on today. So without further ado, Liz and Nicole.
Good morning, everyone. This is Liz. Thanks so much for being with us today. Quickly, I just want to go through our agenda for the webinar. We're going to start by giving you a little bit of background on the Repositioning Family Planning M&E framework, which we created. And then we'll go step by step through the indicators and the rationale for selecting not each and every indicator, but the areas of indicators that we have in the framework. We're going to introduce a decision support tool that we're working on currently to accompany the framework. We'll talk a little bit about where the framework has been applied, next steps, and then at the end we'll have time for questions and answers. So to start with a little bit of background, USAID's Repositioning Family Planning Initiative started, it was a partnership with several organizations, and the purpose was to increase the political and financial commitment to family planning in sub-Saharan Africa with the purpose of expanded access and helping to meet women's stated desires for safe, effective, modern contraception. The Repositioning Initiative identified three key approaches for achieving this goal. The first was advocating for policy change. The second was strengthening leadership. And the third was improving capacity to deliver services. So in this process, many tools and approaches have been developed in research, policy, contraceptive security, service delivery. And as a result, countries are in various stages of repositioning family planning. This has been an ongoing effort over several years. So, and before we get into the presentation any further, I just want to stop and say, what does it mean to reposition family planning? As Nicole and I started this work, we realized that was actually a point of confusion, even among people doing the work. And we talked to different stakeholders, and this first quote, I think, sums it up wonderfully. Everything it takes to get family planning on the radar screen and to keep it there. And really, in our discussions and our focus, we realized that this is focused, repositioning is really focused on the enabling environment. So the policy, the advocacy, the resource mobilization, and then the stewardship, sustainability, leadership. And really, repositioning talks about anything that allows family planning to move forward in a country. And I think the key is regardless of donor priorities. So Measure Evaluation PRH was approached because as all of these activities were ongoing, countries were working to reposition family planning, the question came up, well, how do we know when a country has repositioned family planning? How do we know when a country is making progress or is in a better place? And so we were asked to develop and test a framework by which countries and programs working in this area could monitor and evaluate their progress towards repositioning family planning. And just to briefly go over our process, we started with data gathering, we looked at the USAID strategy, we conducted key informant interviews, we did a document review, and this was actually a very collaborative process. We reviewed frameworks and PMPs from other stakeholder groups working in this area. And from all of that, we took indicators from lots of different places. We then drafted the framework and an M&E approach. We selected indicators. And again, we went back for stakeholder review. And then finally, the framework was tested in Tanzania. And so just to talk a little bit more about the participatory process, because I think it really, really defined the way that this framework was created. We did talk to key informants from 14 different organizations and additional informants from 9 different countries. We reviewed global documents and, as I mentioned, PMPs from various organizations. Every step of the way, there was a several-step review process where everyone was involved in reviewing the indicators that were selected and even how they were organized. And there was a participatory review meeting with the Repositioning Family Planning Working Group. And then finally, even in pilot testing, Measure Evaluation, PRH, and Advanced Family Planning collaborated in Tanzania on that pilot test. And through this, that quote that I mentioned earlier about repositioning family planning being everything it takes to get family planning on the radar screen and keep it there was actually something one of our key informants said, and we just thought it was perfect. Through this process, we also identified challenges to repositioning. People gave input about how they would know, how we would know when a country had repositioned family planning. And as I mentioned, we compiled indicators from a variety of health and development topic areas. So now Nicole is going to go into the framework in more detail.
Thanks, Liz. We started by going back to the original framework on family planning that was generated by Measure Evaluation many years ago under the Evaluation Project, I believe. We wanted to hone in on the different components of repositioning and understand what all was involved so that we could then compile indicators to measure it. And it was reassuring to go back to this bigger picture of family planning to see that the enabling environment, which is including the policy environment, but also importantly, the financial resources and the human resources committed to family planning, were a central part of repositioning. And it helped us to also organize the different functional areas of family planning service provision to understand how that is related to the policy environment. So for instance, policies that relate to commodities and logistics, or policies that relate to behavior change communication, or performance improvement. It was important for us to see repositioning in that bigger picture of family planning service provision so that we could then provide guidance in the framework on how different types of projects, different types of organizations, and different divisions within a Ministry of Health, for instance, could apply these indicators to their own work. So this is the results framework that we developed through this process. And the information from each set of the interviews that we conducted that Liz described, as well as background documents and project performance monitoring plans, were compiled and reviewed as the basis for developing this results framework. The interviews provided insight into the key factors and components involved in repositioning family planning, the potential barriers, which helped inform some of the indicators, and also provided us with some key themes on how organizations were currently monitoring progress towards repositioning family planning. And so these components informed the structure of the results framework, and then also the relationships between the intermediate result areas that you see here in front of you. As many of you know, the results framework is a planning, monitoring, and management tool that helps link the conceptual design, which is the slide that we showed before of the broader picture of family planning. So the results framework links that conceptual design to the reality of program implementation and how you would understand the linkages between program interventions, potential results, and then use that to monitor progress. So at the country level, the breadth and range of indicators that are presented in the framework and that we've used in the framework could be used to assess the overall effort in the country to reposition family planning. But we also wanted it the framework to be available for organizations that may only be working in one particular stream or one particular area of repositioning so that they could then select key indicators that are relevant to the types of programs that they're implementing. I'll tell you a little bit about how we selected the indicators, and then we'll discuss the different components or elements of this results framework in a little more detail. But I just wanted to highlight that here in the strategic objective, it reflects the overall goal of the Repositioning Family Planning Initiative, which is to increase the political and financial commitment for family planning. And so we were showing that increasing stewardship and strengthening the enabling environment would help to address that. And then feeding into the strategic objective are five IRs. IR1 is resources increased and spent on family planning. And that can be, at least in our definitions around indicators, that can be human and financial resources. We're looking at IR2, which is multi-sectoral coordination increased. IR3 are the policies that are adopted and actually put into place. IR4 looks at the use of evidence to inform decision making at different levels. And IR5 looks at capacity strengthened to reposition family planning. I just want to highlight that I see some questions here in the comment box. And if we could wait until after these framework slides to address some of the questions, that would be helpful. Okay, so we selected the indicators by looking back at that compendium of indicators that Measure Evaluation had published many years before, and we decided to use the guidance that had been applied in that process to select the indicators for this framework. So to the extent possible, it was important for us to ensure that we clarified the objectives before we considered these indicators, the objectives of repositioning family planning from different perspectives, donors, programs, and countries. We did that through interviews and document review. We developed a list of possible indicators, and I don't know the exact number, but they were well into the hundreds of indicators related to the enabling environment, indicators that were being applied by international organizations, by country programs, by small NGOs. We assessed each possible indicator, tried to group them according to the IRs, and then we selected the best indicator for repositioning family planning. The project and organization that provided the indicator is definitely cited in our indicator table. And we tried to provide some background information on some of those indicators where possible in the description of the framework. And we found that in several functional areas, there had been a lot of work around indicator development and tools for collecting these data. And just an example would be around contraceptive security. So the USAID Deliver project had identified and tested a very comprehensive set of indicators around contraceptive security. And many of these indicators touched upon elements of repositioning family planning. For countries and organizations that were particularly interested in the financial implications and policy environment around contraceptive security, we were able to provide linkages to those indicators, but then also show how the broader elements of those indicators are represented in our framework. So over the next few slides, you'll see the actual indicators in our framework, and I won't go into those in detail, but I wanted to give a sense of the indicators that we were using and what we were trying to measure. We had a lot of discussion around, you know, some of these words and the definitions, and brought people together to validate the indicators once they had been selected, so that we could, you know, break down the meaning of these words around stewardship, around commitment, sustainability, equity, all of these words we were able to delve into in more detail through group discussion to help inform our definitions around the indicators and around the IRs. So the strategic objective for our framework is increased stewardship of and strengthened enabling environment for effective, equitable, and sustainable family planning programming. And we are attempting to measure that by looking at any government-led councils or coalitions that oversee and manage the family planning program. And we'll describe a little bit later in our applications of the framework how that can follow along a spectrum. We looked at validated instruments that have been developed that, for those of you in the family planning world, you may be familiar with already. The Family Planning Effort Score, the Maternal and Neonatal Program Index, these indices that have already been developed and applied in countries, and looking to them to see if there is improvement in a country's score over time. And then also an indicator that compiles some of the intermediate results. So looking at policy implementation, resources allocated and spent in relation to those policies. IR1 is focused around resources for family planning. And here we have a cascade of indicators. So we're looking at the indicators that are actually allocated or committed indicator, and then looking at the indicator around how they are spent. We also wanted to catch new or increased resources that may show results of advocacy. And this came up because from some of the interviews and regular discussions that we were having with family planning advocates and organizations that were supporting advocacy around family planning, we were hearing that you may not see the results or fruit of your labor for many years from when funding is actually put into the budget and actually spent. So they wanted to find a way to measure commitment around resources. Perhaps it hadn't been allocated in the budget yet, but decision makers were making commitments to do so. So we have an indicator here to be able to capture that that milestone of success in advocacy. IR2 captures multi-sectoral coordination. What we were hearing from many of our key informants was that bringing together the private sector, the public sector, and NGOs was very important. And one of the most important elements was whether or not country leadership was actually engaging these multiple sectors in family planning and repositioning. Also, the extent to which government supported private sector participation, and not just supported, but as you'll see in subsequent indicators, actually incentivizing in some way private sector participation in strengthening the enabling environment for family planning. IR3 is around policies, and this also is indicators that fall into somewhat of a cascade or milestones around strengthening the policy environment for family planning. So we see the first indicator is existence of a policy or a strategic plan. The next indicator is related to that, and that's focused on underserved populations. So what we found through our testing in Tanzania was that many of our key informants in Tanzania felt like the policies have a lot of broad language and may be strong for the general public, but that ultimately, policies around meeting the needs of underserved populations may not be as strong as they could be, and that they felt this was the case for other countries. We were able to discuss that with some of our global key informants, and we agreed to have this as a separate indicator. The third indicator is around an implementation plan that helps specify how the policy or strategic plan should be implemented, whether that be at the national or subnational level. We also have an indicator that looks at policy barriers, and this is broadly policy barriers that may touch on contraceptive security, that may touch on human resources and task shifting. Any policy barriers that affect access to family planning could be captured here. And then the final indicator is around implementation of these policies. And this is where we find the framework extends into programs and looking at to what extent programs are successful as they implement the policies that have been adopted at the national or subnational level. IR4 is around use of data for decision making. And we were looking at this from the national and subnational level. So the first indicator is broadly to look at how data or information were used to support repositioning family planning efforts, whether that was the development of the policy document or a plan. We also looked at the extent to which best practices from the international family planning community are incorporated into any national health standards, whether those are family planning clinical guidelines, whether that's a drug formulary, anything that reflects the national perspective on how family planning should be provided. We also looked at research agendas. We were hearing from key informants that some countries have them, some don't, the extent to which that a research agenda reflects an interest within the country in continuing to develop and fund research around family planning. And so we have here a defined and funded research agenda, and it's been very interesting in some of the applications to see the progress that countries are facing in developing those. And then finally, increased in-country technical capacity around producing data for decision making. The final IR is broadly about strengthened capacity, individual or institutional capacity, and that can be within the public sector, civil society, or private sector in order to assume leadership around the family planning agenda. So this included indicators that may be measured along a spectrum of in looking at capacity building. So for instance, the first indicator looks at organizations who have been provided with some sort of assistance, whether that be training, technical assistance, mentoring, and the ability of that organization to independently implement what they have learned through that assistance. It looks at government bodies or entities that are established or strengthened to support family planning. It also looks at individuals, and we did that through this third indicator, and that is public or private sector officials, faith-based organizations, or community leaders who are demonstrating increased commitment to family planning, whether that's new commitment that they haven't stated before, or increased commitment, financial or otherwise, to stand behind the family planning agenda. And then finally, we wanted to see the extent to which countries have at their disposal and country governments have at their disposal a regional or national center around education and research in family planning. And this may be a university, an institute, or it may be a collaborative, a group of organizations who take the lead in research in family planning. So using these indicators, we pilot tested the framework in Tanzania. We wanted to verify and finalize the framework based on these indicators. So we applied the framework by reviewing documents in detail. We conducted a desk review and prepared for the field testing. We then applied the framework by conducting interviews in Tanzania. I believe it was 31 key informant interviews to collect additional documents to also get responses to each of the indicators that we had put into the framework. And then using that information, we were able to tweak some indicators and finalize that framework following the pilot test. This is just a list of some of the organizations who were a part of that pilot test. And Liz will tell you in a few moments about how we reapplied the framework in Tanzania in order to gather information about what had happened since, but also to test an accompanying tool. And many of these same organizations were involved in that application as well. The information that's generated through the framework and through applications of the framework can be used by governments or donors to think about how they can take further action in repositioning family planning. What's left to be done? Donors can better allocate their resources across the different components of repositioning if they understand where they're already seeing successes, what may need further investment, and then where there may be significant gaps in the effort to reposition family planning. And then projects and organizations can shape their work plans. So in the case of a project who is active in a country and supporting the government and civil society and the private sector, this can help inform where they put their emphasis in their annual plans. We found some called for a scorecard of sorts that donors or projects or governments could use to monitor over time how they were performing against these different indicators. So since applying the framework through that test in Tanzania, we revised the framework and accompanying tools. Also, the indicators were included into another tool that has been developed by Measure Evaluation PRH, which is an indicator database, a compendium of indicators, and repositioning is now one component of that. The framework was then applied in 8 West African countries, and these West African applications helped to reveal to us an efficient and participatory format for applying the framework, and it allowed for people to really discuss the country's performance against these different indicators. And we'll have links at the very end of the presentation where you can see the reports from these 8 West African countries. So now I'm going to pass the microphone over to Liz. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties, and she'll tell us a little bit about the decision support tool and its development and application around this framework.
Sorry about that. My computer is not cooperating this morning. So basically, in this process, and I think even in developing the framework, we always wondered if we wouldn't need some kind of decision support tool. And as we piloted the framework, as other countries in West Africa were using it, it became more clear that we really did need a tool to accompany the framework, mainly because applying the framework produces a large amount of qualitative data. And so first off, just organizing that information and making it accessible for use, we realized a decision support tool would be really helpful. We were also curious, one of the main purposes at the country level that, you know, people had expressed that this would be useful is for progress monitoring. And so we wanted to know if scoring would be useful or feasible, and to get, you know, information from stakeholders about that. Because ultimately, you know, we are strong proponents of the idea that information that you collect against indicators like these should be used in decision making. And so we wanted to make that as easy as possible. So just, again, we followed a pretty similar format, a similar process in creating the decision support tool. We did a literature review around data visualization, how best to take qualitative information and present it so people could make decisions with it. we reached back out to some of the key informants that helped us in creating the original framework, and we also attempted to reach out to stakeholders in West Africa and the countries where the framework had been used, and we also reviewed existing tools. We eventually decided to go with a simple Excel model. There was sort of some back and forth discussion between the possibility of using a simple model and then doing something more online. But I think for in-country
Hello, everyone. I apologize. We're having a little bit of a technical difficulty. We're going to try to get our presenters back online, and here they are now. So hold on just a moment.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Liz.
Okay, so sorry about that. I'll jump back just a little bit. As I said, we were thinking of developing the tool, and we eventually decided to go with a simple Excel model because of accessibility concerns at the country level. We developed draft criteria, which I'll explain in a little bit more detail in a second, and a draft scoring mechanism, and basically created a pilot tool. We were very fortunate that at the same time, Tanzania, it had actually been about 2 years since the initial application of the framework, and Tanzania was interested in sort of reassessing to see what was going on currently and had asked HPI to do another application of the framework. And so we were able to work in collaboration to, at that point, pilot test the decision support tool. And we are in the process of revising the tool. So our pilot testing objectives were essentially, you know, as I mentioned, we wanted to apply the framework again. And so from the West African applications, we learned that while the first pilot testing was done through key informant interviews, the second application was actually done through a mixture of key informant interviews and a group discussion with key stakeholders in Tanzania. And through that group consensus, we were able to basically self-score against these indicators. And so in this process, we had them review earlier findings. Since we had them from Tanzania, we asked them for updates. We gathered information to see, you know, what had changed in the last 2 years. And again, we pilot tested the decision support tool, having them self-score. And from that, we started a discussion about policy priorities in Tanzania. And then after the meeting, we followed up for missing evidence and additional stakeholder feedback about the tool itself. So this is a screenshot of actually IR1 in the decision support tool. And so this is the data entry. And you can see this is just for these more quantitative indicators. You can see that this is just sample data and looks at two separate data points and then a comparison against a regional average. And so this is, when we created the scoring mechanism, the basic thought behind it is that for the quantitative data points, we have one historical point, second, that's the most recent, and then we have a third regional or country target, depending, that it would be compared to. And basically, we're looking, you know, where appropriate. If you're hoping to see an increase, that's the first thing, you know, is it increasing from point 1 to point 2? And then how does that compare to either the target or a regional comparison? Some of the questions are on a Likert scale, and the scoring that goes with them is 4 points, and the scoring would be from green to yellow to orange to red. And finally, there were a few questions that it overcomplicated things to have the 4-point scale, and so it was a simple yes or no, with yes being green and red being no. And so this is an example of under IR5. You can see that when I talked earlier about developing criteria, this is what I meant. We actually have questions, almost like sub-indicators, but not quite, questions under each indicator that would facilitate discussion amongst the group. So as they answered the questions, and they basically had the choice, you can see, where they would say each question, where they would answer yes completely, they would be scored a green, no, not at all would be a red, mostly would be a yellow and somewhat would be an orange. And there was a lot of discussion about that. There was discussion amongst the group about the color choice. In some cases we changed the language or in the process of changing the language on the Likert score because they didn't feel like the answer choices made sense for that question. And so we're in the process of reworking some of those things. And finally, this is one of the dashboards that was produced. And so basically, it just helped, this was what we had during the test, and it helped facilitate the discussion because once we were all done, everything was scored, we presented this, and then we broke up into groups and had people discuss, and they were able to see, well, wow, we have a lot of red in IR2, so let's go back and look at what that means, why we scored ourselves that way, and what decisions do we need to make as a result. So in conclusion, I'm going to hand it back to Nicole.
So I wanted to share with you some of the feedback that we received from countries, and this is, in addition to Tanzania, feedback that we received from countries in West Africa who had applied the framework. What we've heard from many people is that this was the first time they had been exposed to policy-related indicators and enabling environment-related indicators. And so some expressed the need for a thorough training of sorts on how you collect information around the policy environment, how you use that information to inform improvements in the process or to move on and identify where there may be gaps and move on from there. Some countries also expressed the need to have policy indicators included in their management information system. They said, that this information is useful for us to know in addition to service statistics, and we should have some way to capture elements of the enabling environment around policy, finance, and multi-sectoral coordination in our HMIS. Finally, some countries requested further training around advocacy and specifically understanding how the findings from applying the framework could be used in their advocacy efforts, how they could take that information and move forward, for instance, to members of parliament and say, this is how our country looks right now in our effort to reposition family planning. This is where we stand financially for our own government's financial investments. This is where the extent to what others are investing in family planning in our country, and so we need to increase our investment. That's just an example of what people were hoping to see in the future related to this framework. And I think that what we've also found through our discussions with people, several key informants that we spoke with at the very beginning of this process, we're still in touch with them now, whether they've applied the framework themselves, whether they've taken some indicators from the framework, or whether they've just maintained an interest because of their own organization's efforts around repositioning family planning. And what we've heard is that, there's a way to use this information to understand sustainability around a country's investments in family planning, but that it all needs to be, taken together and look at the broader picture. Also, we're seeing a greater emphasis on the policy environment and policy monitoring in other health areas. And so this framework, what we're hearing about this framework is that it has applicability to other health and social areas, that it has applicability, by adapting some of these indicators. For instance, the HIV community, PEPFAR and others can use these types of indicators to monitor progress in the policy, financial, and other elements of the enabling environment. So just for instance, some of the country teams, PEPFAR country teams, are already reporting on elements of policy, but they may not be capturing all this entire spectrum around from policy development to implementation, or they may not be capturing the financial components. And so what we've heard is that this framework is really a compilation or a starting point around the enabling environment that people had not felt was available before. So we would like to hear from you, any questions that you might have, thoughts about the framework, and also to hear about thoughts for how this may be applicable in different countries around family planning, but also around linkages with other health areas. Okay, so we have one question here, and I think that it may be visible now to all of you. The question says, it seems one of the assumptions of the framework is that integration of family planning at the service delivery level is a core component of the repositioning effort. I wonder if you can comment on the level of examining this assumption was done in the working group and whether there are efforts to test that assumption. Actually, this discussion, this issue around integration did come up. Some of our key informants asked us to include indicators around integration. Others felt like we should not, that there wasn't adequate evidence to show that we should support integration as the way to go in this framework. And upon further reading and discussion, we decided to not delve into that territory any more than we were delving into, for instance, the issue of task shifting. So the indicators in the framework can be applied to policy issues around integration and policy barriers around integration, just as they could be applied to an issue around task shifting or commodity security. Let's see, we have a couple more questions here. Let's see here. This question says, who is responsible for collecting and inputting the information, and what is the role of civil society in helping to gather the information? I'm thinking for longer-term sustainability and accountability, having communities and civil society engaged would be critical. And yes, we completely agree with that. In a country, the framework has been applied with a few different nuances based on the particular country. So when we were pilot testing the framework, we used a key informant interview approach because we were really trying to validate the indicators. But once those indicators had been more or less validated by both application in other organizations' frameworks, but also through our pilot test, we found that in West Africa they used a mixed methods approach. And we did the same just recently in Tanzania. So we used a participatory framework, a format in a workshop whereby different partners were represented. This includes country government, this includes civil society, this included donor representatives in some cases, and then international organizations or international organizations implementing projects funded by donors. They had a role in providing data and evidence to fulfill these indicators, but they also were able to discuss these different issues amongst themselves and come to a conclusion about where they felt the country stood. We completely agree about the role of civil society in thinking about sustainability and accountability, and it would certainly be possible for a civil society organization to take this framework and lead the application of these indicators, whether that be through a participatory process or key informant interviews, to collect and report back to the global community about how their country is performing and repositioning. Okay, so here's another question. What are the elements of the, thank you, this is very informative. What are the elements of the enabling environment? That was a key question for us as we embarked on this framework. And what we determined is, based on our interviews and document reviews, that we were looking at policies, so the legal and regulatory framework that exists in a country around family planning, and that may be, for instance, how family planning factors into wider development plans. It may be how family planning factors into the non-health sector, the extent to which, for instance, the Ministry of Education or the education community addresses needs of adolescents for family planning. So that wider policy environment also includes regulations around family planning. What types of commodities are available in a country? What types of providers can deliver family planning services? Another element of the enabling environment are the financial resources available for family planning. And so this framework attempts to capture information about resources from all different sides that are available. And in some countries, that data is very robust, and in some countries, it may be quite weak. When we're looking at the enabling environment, we're also looking at the level of collaboration across sectors in providing family planning. So is this very donor-driven? Is it led by civil society and communities with very little government input? Is this a service that's provided by the government with very little consultation with communities and civil society? Or is this a coordinated process delivering and informing the policy environment? Is that a collaborative process? Underlying all of this is the capacity of different partners, different groups and individuals working in the family planning world in that country, the capacity to advocate for family planning, the capacity to strengthen the provision of family planning and strengthen access to family planning. And that capacity, we were looking at areas around drawing upon and relying upon data to make those decisions, but also the ability and capacity of an institution to participate in that process, in the policy environment, in the financing environment. Let's see, one question here. Trying to read all of it. Okay. You asked about applications for other health areas. The methods and resulting dashboard is very similar to an effort to measure readiness to scale up newborn health interventions. A paper was published on this effort in a health policy and planning supplement last year. Different terminology was used, benchmarks as opposed to indicators. Because the policy development to policy implementation continuum was added later, the benchmarks were structured around a different framework for a pathway to scale, but the approach is very similar and worth looking at. Thank you, Anne. We will take a look at that.
Hi, everyone. Hopefully you can hear me. This is Liz again. We have our next question. What are the next steps? How should countries begin continue to use the indicators? How often should they be examined in a country? So as I mentioned, we are in the process of finalizing the decision support tool and creating a guidance document that basically, it's almost like a facilitator's guide, not quite obviously, but around applying the framework using the decision support tool. And that should be available around the end of the month, if not early July. And this question of how often they should be examined is one that we actually took back to our stakeholders. And I think the consensus was, you know, in a perfect world, maybe once a year, but really every couple of years is probably ideal. Because the effort to collect the information is sort of intense, and it's unlikely that things will change that quickly. Anyway, as I said, the final guidance document, the framework with all the indicator reference sheets, and guidance about how to apply the framework will be available on the Measure Evaluation PRH site. And it looks like... Oh, it looks like we have one more question. Sorry. It seems that the process of collecting the data for indicators in the framework could be cumbersome and time-consuming. The framework is certainly a very comprehensive approach. Can it be simplified? Reduce the number of indicators to key ones that can be easily measured and monitored. I think this is a good question, and I think it really depends on the application. And a lot of times we really thought about making a menu of indicators. And I think as we've seen at the country level, it is really useful to collect all of the information and all of the indicators. But we did create and sort of worded the indicators even in an adaptable way so that a program could most certainly pick a smaller number of the indicators and use them as they implement a program that fits sort of within the repositioning family planning efforts. And certainly, there's actually talk in West Africa, now that the framework has been implemented, that some of these indicators should be pulled and put into the routine health information system collection process. And so, yes, so clearly, you know, ideally, I think everything would be collected, but clearly there's a lot of room to sort of take what's key and essential and use it for the purpose that you have. And it looks like we've been asked for the link to the PRH site, which is over on the right, the bottom. You'll see Measure Evaluation PRH. It's been added under Additional Resources.
And finally, one more question I see here. How many indicators are included in the current version of the Complete Decision-Making Tool? I believe it's 26 indicators, I believe. What we have found, just to add to what Liz was saying about, you know, that the indicators could be cumbersome and time-consuming, what we found in Tanzania, for instance, and I think that this was the situation for West Africa, we were talking with people who were already a part of a national level working group, or were already a part of a national level process around repositioning, whether they were coordinating the process, that whether they were, you know, participating in some element of repositioning family planning. What we found was that, you know, over the last 2 to 3 years, with increased funding from multiple donors going back into family planning, with the London Summit FP 2020 coming on board, there are more and more people that have a real finger on the pulse of all of these indicator areas. And so while you may not have all of the documentation for all of the different indicators right away, and you may need to go back to different people in country to gather specific documented evidence, there are groups of people working in all of the countries the 9 countries where we've applied the tool. There are individuals who have their finger on the pulse of all these different issues represented in the framework and are able to produce quite quickly the financial data. You know, it may not be absolutely complete. That absolute complete data around finances for family planning may not be available in a given country, but for what data that does exist, people are able to put their hands on it fairly quickly. So we were pleasantly surprised that it wasn't quite as cumbersome as we may have thought.
And thank you so much for all these questions. I do want to note that it's 11:04, and so if you need to leave us at this point, I just wanted to alert everyone to the time. But we're happy to stay and continue answering questions for those of you who do have them. So our next question, oh, I think this is just a resource. The Health Policy and Planning Benchmark article is on PubMed, and there's a link. So thank you, Jean, for that.
Okay, here's one more question. Let's see. Were there indicators for reducing stigma and discrimination? Sometimes this can be a barrier when creating an enabling environment. And I completely agree. We did have some discussion around this in Tanzania recently about adolescents and their access to contraception and repercussions of applying contraceptives, for instance, being expelled from school. It can certainly be a barrier. And some of these stories, what we found was we may not have, for instance, an indicator that's specific to stigma and discrimination, but we found that this came up quite often in the discussions around multi-sectoral collaboration, which I think we use the word multi-sectoral, but we also get into multidisciplinary. So, for instance, there was a lot of discussion around the relationship between the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Education in Tanzania, the engagement, how the Ministry of Education could be more engaged in issues around adolescent health and family planning and sexual and reproductive health. So these issues were touched upon, even though there's not a specific indicator for stigma and discrimination. Okay, I don't see any other questions. We would be delighted to get any other questions or resources that you have at your fingertips. It seems like there's a lot of interesting discussion around this. And so we're going to provide our email addresses to you in the Q&A comments section, and feel free to contact us directly. Oh, and just a comment here, that cultural values seem to be more appropriate nomenclature for adolescent problems such as school expulsion. Thank you for that comment. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming and participating in the webinar. We really enjoyed the discussion, and we look forward to hearing from you and to hearing any examples of how you're able to use the framework or apply the framework.